available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome back, everybody, to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site of the Scout.com network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the Scout.com network. And we are the Podcast of Champions. Back, hey, a couple weeks in a row. We're on a roll here, Dave. And
we're killing it.
We're actually doing our jobs here. If you want to get a hold of us, send us some emails, pac12podcast@gmail.com, or tweet us. At Pac-12 Podcast, we like to get the snarky tweets out there. We do that pretty well, I think. Pac-12podcast.com is the website where you can find all of the past episodes. You can give us a call, too, if you want. 641-715-3900, extension 734-972. Go to iTunes. You can subscribe, rate us there. A lot of different ways to get a hold of us. Hope you guys have been enjoying the shows and enjoying Pac-12 football, which... it's just been kind of all over the place, Dave.
Yeah, it's been wild. It's been wild. We were just discussing our power rankings, and we had to jumble basically everything between, what, 4 and 9? Because things are just all over the place. It's been a fun season so far. I don't think I'm ready to jump off the bandwagon of there probably not being a playoff team in this group. But it's been, you know, it's been a Pac-12 season. It's been a lot of fun, and we haven't even really gotten into the conference schedule yet. We've only had one conference on conference game so far. So I'm excited. I'm excited for the conference schedule kicking off here.
Yeah, I think that'll be, it'll be fun to, discuss all that, all the different conference games. And I don't know. I mean, like, we still have, well, we don't want to give anything away, but you know, Stanford and Washington still look like, you know, the two best shots, which is amazing for Chris Peterson to have turned things around. Mm-hmm. I mean, Steve Sarkisian took a, you know, 0-12 team and made them into a winning team. But to take it to the next level, that's what's hard. And Chris Peterson looks like he's doing that. We don't want to anoint them too early, especially after Dave picked them to win 3 games or whatever last year. But still, they look like a team, to be reckoned with in the Pac-12. So that, you know, there's a little hope there. We, you know, everyone was writing off the Pac-12, Dave, that not being a playoff team, but there's some hope. There's some really talented teams.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's going to be interesting with Washington because they've only played, we'll get into our Washington-Arizona preview, but they haven't played pretty much anyone yet. I mean, the Rutgers is probably their best opponent, and Rutgers is not good. So, I think we all know Washington's a good team, but it's going to take until a few games into the Pac-12 whether we know if it's a potentially great team. But there's a lot to like. There's a good general quality in the Pac-12. I just don't know. You just don't know if there's that elite team, but I think we'll find out here pretty soon in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. And then, I'm back in the studio, so I have our picks. So we wanted to keep track this year because I thought we did a pretty good job against the spread last year. Yeah. So, it was a little less high tech, in week 2, Dave. I wrote them down in a notebook instead of writing them down in my Google Docs, which I will do from now on. But, pick wise, week 2, Dave actually beat me. It was 7-3. He had 7 wins against the spread against 3 losses, which is really good. I was 6-4, which is actually still pretty good. If you're above .500, you want to be, above .500 there, but, Dave won week 2. I end up winning week 3. There was 2 pushes, 2 games that were exact. I think it was like a 7-point spread and a 3-point spread that we hit on the number, but, I was 7-2-2 against the spread and Dave was 6-3-2. So overall, we're tied right now, but doing pretty good against the spread. We haven't had any horrible weeks. I've been 0-2 against, picking USC, so we'll see what I do this week.
You know, it was funny. Last year, I think through the first 5 or 6 weeks, I picked USC not only wrong against the spread every single time, but I picked them wrong win-loss every single week for like the 5 weeks of the season. So we've just traded that off now. You have the you're not going to pick USC correctly, and I will. So
yeah.
That's the way we're going now.
Right. We'll keep track of our picks again, and hopefully we made you guys a little bit of money. Probably not, but hey, we're doing our best out here.
Please don't listen to our picks.
No. Yeah. Don't go bet a whole bunch of money on our picks. Unless you win and you want to share it with us, then definitely do that.
Yeah. And if you want to split any winnings, just don't split the losses with us.
Yeah. And people did enjoy, according to the tweets, they enjoyed us trying to, make fun, like recreate the sound effects. But, like I said, I'm back. So we do have the sound effects.
Pac-12 Roundup.
Oh, yeah, baby.
And we're going to start from the bottom. Our number 12 team has not changed. Pretty much everything else has except the very top. So at number 12, Dave, we have...
Washington State Cougars.
Yeah, the Cougars. So the Cougars are off this week. They are the, I think, one Pac-12 team on a bye. Last week, they beat Idaho 56-6, which... You know, I think the spread on that game was like 26.5 or something, and I took Idaho just pretty much out of spite for Washington State once again looking kind of poopy through the first two games. But they took care of business. I don't know what else you can really take from this one. I mean, they ran the ball pretty well, and Washington State's not typically a running team, so that was interesting to see. But overall, this was just, you know, they did what they needed to do against an Idaho team, and now they get a bye week to kind of lick their wounds before going against Oregon in a week. And, that'll be, and we'll get into this, but that'll be a slightly depleted, Oregon team. So I think the stage is set. If Washington State is going to right the ship, I think they can start, next week against Oregon. But, I think they've got a lot to iron out. Even with a 50-point win against Idaho, I think they've got a lot to iron out before they get into the Pac-12 schedule.
Yeah. It was, this was a game where that we picked differently. I picked Washington State. So I ended up getting an extra point on Dave on this one, but, you know, got to see some of this. There was a play early on where I think Washington State fans were just gasping when Gabe Marks, like he totally, dove for this ball, laid out for it, and he came up and it looked like he just lost his breath or something or got the wind knocked out of him. He ended up coming back in. So that would have been, disaster. He ended up catching a touchdown pass like soon after that. So I think they had a blocked field goal for a touchdown early on in the game too. And one of those things where you get a big special teams play early and it sort of opens up the floodgates. I kind of got the feeling, Dave, that that's one of the things that would happen here, but I thought Wicks ran the ball well. And when he was running, they set up the play action, yep, in the first half. One other note? Oh, they haven't, they were 0-for-3 on field goals. This season, they hit like the upright on the end of the first half. I don't remember if they end up hitting one in the second half, but,
they're still 0-for.
0-for. Okay. Yeah. So that was a special teams, you know, little concern there for Washington State going forward. You want to be able to kick a couple field goals at some point, but, I did feel like they ran the ball pretty well. And then, you know, the fact that you can throw the ball all over the field, if you can run the ball and then set it up with play action, I think they can be really devastating. So we'll see if they'll be able to continue doing that, but that's something to watch for this Washington State team that's, you know, trying to crawl back out of the hole they dug for them in the first two games.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see because aside from Luke Falk's 5 runs, they had 30 other runs in this game against 44 passes, which, you know, I don't know that Mike Leach has really ever run the ball to that great of an extent. I'm sure there's been a few occasions, but it'll be interesting to see if they're starting to lean a little bit on that running game because if you remember last year, I mean, their running backs themselves are actually pretty good.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if they maybe are, you know, reconfiguring things a little. I don't think Mike Leach is ever going to go away from the full, like, air raid, but, maybe they do lean on the running game a little bit more just to control the ball a little bit more and keep other teams' offenses off the field. It'll be interesting to see what they do going forward.
Now they got a bye. We actually have a pretty good, segue because our buddy Bruce Feldman tweeted this, or put a story out, and I ended up tweeting it out, that Washington State, lowly Washington State that throws the ball over the field, is running for more yards per game, 122, than our number 11 team, Tailback U, who's running for 120 yards per game. So number 11, all the way down to number 11 we have...
USC Trojans.
And they took on the number one team in the ever-popular... Podcast of Champions Power Rankings.
Stanford Cardinal.
Yeah, so this one was this was not fun for USC fans probably to watch. So Stanford beat USC 27-10. it was kind of a weird game because USC, if you were really watching the first half, USC was running the ball okay on Stanford. Just kept shooting themselves in the foot a little bit, couldn't really get much in the air going. And then defensively, it was just, once again, the Christian McCaffrey show. He had 165 yards on the ground. He had 73 yards receiving, and he had, what did he have? Only 22 yards returned. So that's a big win right there. He only had about 250 all-purpose yards. So, that's better than 400.
Yes.
So I think everyone will take that. But
yeah, he had 461 last year. And, I think we talked about this in the podcast, the fact that USC had a whole bunch of, touchbacks on kickoffs. I think they had 7 through the first 2 games, had 11 all of last year. So that would be one way to try to limit him. So he didn't have the same kind of return yardage, but he still killed him in the run game and the pass game.
Yeah. So this is an interesting one. Because after this game, there's been a lot of, talk of turmoil at USC, coaches getting punched in the face, 50 guys transferring, all this stuff. So what's the tenor of USC right now?
Yeah, it's, so it's been a crazy week. Talking to the players, there was, I wouldn't say that the locker room was lost, but there was definitely some chinks in the armor, I guess.
Locker room was misplaced for just a little.
Yeah. Bit. And like Sam Darnold felt that, we talked to him after the game and he felt that the team at halftime looked like they had lost. And then we talked to other players that didn't feel that way. It's weird because they actually came out and had their best drive of the game in the beginning of the third quarter and scored a touchdown. Their only touchdown against the Power 5 opponent all year. So I don't know, maybe whatever, if they were down in the locker room, it helped. I'm not sure. But then obviously be a 1-2, high expectations. It's not an easy schedule. You lose to Alabama and Stanford. And you've got a rookie head coach. The offense looks terrible. I mean, they had 4 false start penalties, Dave, in the first quarter, 6 in the game, and they were just drive-killing kind of things. It just doesn't look like an organized team, and the offense doesn't look organized. And, of course, on Monday, the day I decided to go golfing and take the day off, but they play on Friday, so normally they don't practice on a Monday.
Right.
They practice on Tuesday, but they're playing on Friday, so they moved it up. I had already planned a golf day with buddies down in Orange County. You know, guys don't need to know this, but when I don't go to practice, then of course all the news breaks. They named Sam Darnold the starter, which is a lot of people said it's kind of rearranging the deck chair to the Titanic. You know, like what does that really matter? It wasn't the quarterback that was, losing you games. I think that's going to hurt the locker room too. Just kind of switching quarterbacks 3 games in. It's not really fair to Max Brown, who's waited for 4 years to start and you let him start at 2 games. On the road against Stanford and Alabama, and you don't do well, and you say, okay, you're out. Don't really agree with that, but that's just been some of the crazy stuff that's been going around USC lately, Dave.
Yeah, if I was doing free word association, I'd say scapegoating. I would say that.
That's a good one, yeah.
That's maybe the thing that's happening here, because honestly, I mean, I joked about it last time. Darnold has looked maybe a little bit better in games, maybe, and it sounds like from the offseason reports, he probably looked a little bit better in practice, but not so demonstrably different. And better that this is really going to matter. And it sounds like from a leadership perspective, Brown is kind of the guy. I mean, he's a captain. The whole deal probably has the respect of the locker room. Darnold's a redshirt freshman who may or may not have that. I mean, he might. Who knows? But that it all seems very weird. It seems like, I joked about this a bunch on Twitter going into the season that, they were only naming Brown the starter to keep him, in the program so that he couldn't grad transfer with 2 years of eligibility. But after 3 games, making this switch, after saying so many times, we're going to give a real shot to whoever wins the job, it feels that way. Like, it feels like, maybe they just kind of made this choice. This was one of the factors in that choice to keep the guy in the program. And now we'll see. I mean, does it sound from what you're hearing that Brown's going to transfer?
He talked about keeping all of his options open. I don't see any way he does not. And, maybe something weird would have to happen. Like, they put him back in, but he admitted, I mean, he's very classy about it, Dave. And he admitted, like, it never happens. You don't see the younger guy go in and then get replaced. Like, when you put the younger guy in, that's what happens. So barring some sort of injury, Max Brown is done. And he's not going to come in and play like Sam Darnold was when Max was in. So really, he's getting the short end of the stick here. Because he already graduated, he can transfer probably. I would guess he'll transfer somewhere in the spring. I mean, I could see him going up to like Washington State or something and just throwing the ball all over the field. And USC plays Washington State next year, so that would be kind of fun to do there. But so, yeah, I don't see any way, unless something weird happens or he becomes a starter again and they make some kind of run, that he would stick around, at this point. I mean, if I was him, I certainly wouldn't. So, yeah, but he hasn't come out and said that specifically.
All right. So on the, okay. So we'll get into USC's game this week in just a second, but we haven't even really talked about Stanford.
We got to talk about Stanford. Yeah.
This was just a Stanford type of win. They, really, just methodical, you know, it was 17-3 at the half. And then USC came out and, you know, I want to give USC credit because I think I said something on Twitter that, you know, at the end of the second quarter when, you know, it was 17-3 and some bad stuff had just happened. I just said, this is typically the point of a game when USC would just kind of quit. And they didn't. They came out in the third quarter and put a nice drive together. But then Stanford scored 10, and it was pretty much over at that point. You know, it's not the same kind of Stanford team as last year. I don't think the offense is going to be anywhere near as explosive as it was a year ago. But they're beating teams comfortably. I mean, they beat Kansas State 26-13, and they beat USC 27-10. So they treated Kansas State and USC like they were about the same team, which I think is pretty impressive, and I think it speaks to the way Stanford just controls games the way they want to control them.
Yeah, funny. Daniel Jeremiah, who's an NFL Network guy we're friends with, he tweeted at me, he's like, they kill you with 1,000 paper cuts. And then you know, but they also have the capability of cutting your arm off when Christian McCaffrey breaks open. But you watch him, and I thought that they bring in that ogre package on offense, and they can just pick up yard. Like, what is it, 3rd and 2? Yeah. Bringing those big guys, and they get the 2 yards. It's a methodical process. And then every once in a while, if you saw that first Christian McCaffrey touchdown, they ended up having 2 backs in the backfield. McCaffrey goes out in a wheel route, and the other back, I think it was Love, they faked a handoff to him. Safety kind of bites on the play action because they've been running the ball pretty well, leaving McCaffrey alone down the sideline. And it's just like, you know, boom, touchdown. It's just like that. So I think you see the way the offense is designed, and they'll set up plays maybe 5-6 plays ahead of time. And there's a method to what they're doing, and the plays that they're setting up, the bigger plays work. And that's how you can set up the bigger plays. And there was another McCaffrey. He almost had another touchdown, on a catch, where he just lined up at the outside receiver, lined up on the safety, beat him badly. And, Burns overthrew him. There would have been another just, you know, glory touchdown there. And that wasn't trickery. That was just, we're putting McCaffrey out as a wide receiver, try to cover him, and USC couldn't. So I thought they did a great job. I thought, you know, defensively, you know, they were pretty methodical there too. Just, you know, forcing enough negative plays, getting you in longer, you know, third down situations where it's just going to be hard to pick up and sustain drive. So, you know, you might have a big play here or there. But if you want to try to sustain drives, I think the Stanford defense did a really good job of preventing you from doing that.
Yeah, for sure. And, yeah, that would have given, I think that was like a 40-ish yard, 50-yard type throw, what it would have been. So that would have put him over 300 all-purpose yards. So that would have been a nice day for Christian McCaffrey. It was just subpar, you know. all right. So for USC, they go against Utah this week. Should we play Utah's music? So this is kind of disorganized because we got to do the previous game for the team, but we also have to do the next game.
Yeah.
So should we do Utah's previous game now?
Wow. Okay. Yeah, let's, so we'll kind of jump around our Pac-12 rankings, I guess.
Do it. Okay. Let's do it.
Okay. So we'll do that. So, USC is the number 11 team, and they'll be taking on
Utah Utes.
Yeah, we have them as our number 3 team at 3-0.
Okay, so Utah kind of had a funny game against San Jose State, which I think the odds makers sort of predicted. They only had Utah as a 13-point favorite. Took a while for Utah to get going in this one. They eventually won 34-17 when a lot of people were tweeting about this. They're like, they just realized they were Utah all of a sudden, and they were much, much better than the San Jose State team, and they kind of poured it on in the second quarter and then into the third, and put the game kind of out of reach for San Jose State. It was a nice bounce back game for Utah after kind of a disconcerting win over BYU that saw some guys get injured. Troy Williams, he still threw a pick, but he had a much better game, completed 20 of 28 passes with a touchdown. Running the ball went really, really well. 37 rushes for 201 yards, 3 touchdowns, and it was kind of an all purpose thing. Zach Moss had 12 carries. Armand Shine had 12 carries. Troy McCormick had 7 carries, and they all averaged, you know, well over 7 yards a carry. It was just kind of a methodical, you know, nice win for them. And after kind of allowing a little bit to San Jose State in the first half, they really shut them down for most of the second half, and a late touchdown, but it wasn't really anything significant. It was a nice win for Utah, a nice bounce back win.
Yeah, this was one. So it was a 13.5-point spread. I got this one. I picked Utah. You picked San Jose State. So this was another one that we had a little differently. So I had this one right. Yeah, San Jose State was winning this game second quarter.
Yeah.
And then I think you put it well. Like, Utah just figured out, hey, we're Utah. I do like the fact that they were spreading the ball around with the running backs. I thought, you know, Troy McCormick, who was out last year with an injury, you know, he's a junior. I thought he might be the workhorse guy, but, you know, maybe he ends up being that way towards the end of the season. But having, you know, a few different guys you can rely on and run the football and try different things with, I like that fact of the offense too. I think it helps, certainly helps Troy Williams the better they can run the football. And it looks like they're kind of getting their stride, you know, both lines. You expect them to play well. I think they did. Good pass rush from Utah. So yeah, I think it was, you know, start off a little slow, but a good win overall.
Yeah, I thought it was generally, it was a nice bounce back. And, it was good to see them rush the passer pretty well, despite, you know, not having Kylie Fitz available, who's probably out for the year. It was, just generally, I thought a pretty nice win. And now, it's going to be USC Utah this week. And yeah, this is going to be a Friday night game, which, in Utah, which is going to be fun. This will be 6 p.m. on Fox Sports 1, USC going at number 24, Utah. So Utah snuck back into the rankings this week as well. Utah's favored by 3. I think this opened as Utah -1, and then it moved to Utah -3. Over-under set at 46.5, so people are expecting a defensive struggle in this one. I honestly don't know what to expect from USC in this game. I think they could absolutely have a nice bounce back game and really put together a nice performance. And Sam Darnold, with his ability to run a little bit more than Max Brown, could cause some issues for that Utah defense. Or I could see a complete collapse. I honestly don't have a good feel for it. What's your feel?
Exact same. We were talking the media at practice yesterday, and I said, you know, it's rare I go into a game and wouldn't be shocked by any outcome. Like, if USC blew out Utah, kind of like they did last year, they have enough talent to do that. If Utah blew out USC, certainly wouldn't be shocked at that. If it was close either way, I wouldn't be shocked. I think this could go in so many different directions, and you have this established team in Utah that's well coached and good special teams and great line play and can run the ball, dynamic quarterback. And it's going to be a blackout. I mean, they're going to be excited. I mean, and revenge on their minds because what USC did to them last year.
USC derailed their season last year after they kind of, I think they were what, number three or
I think
something?
Number three in the country. Yeah, 6-0. And USC just derailed it. So obviously, and you know, USC has a Utah player on their team, Stevie Tuikolovatu, who transferred over. I mean, I think there's a lot on the Utah side to want to win this game. And USC, you know, whenever you put in a backup quarterback, a lot of times it's an exciting thing. I don't know in this case, though. I think a bunch of the coaches did want Sam Darnold to go in there, but you know, the players elected Max Brown as the captain. I think it could certainly hurt the locker room. It's a short week, and the fact that you play the most physical team in the conference or one of the top two, Stanford, and 6 days later you're playing Utah, both on the road. You know, for me, if I had to bet, which is what we're doing, I'm going to take Utah, given 3 points. But like I said, I wouldn't be shocked at anything. It's just, there's so many variables in this one for me, Dave, that it just could go almost any direction.
Yeah. I think I'm probably in the same boat. I think I like Utah something like 28-20, 28-21, something like that. I think it's going to be it's going to be very, very physical. I think Utah's, I think like you said, they're going to play with a pretty big chip on their shoulder after last year. And USC, I don't know. I mean, there was so much controversy and weirdness this week that, yeah, I mean, everyone's denying that EJ Price punched anyone in the face, and I completely believe that he did not. But the fact that all that stuff is bubbling up, that there are wild rumors, it's just, you know, this is the same kind of crazy turmoil that USC's had for the last, 5 years.
Right. And so, it was supposed to go away when you hire, you know, Clay Helton. Clay Helton actually had a funny line where he said, yeah, I wasn't punched in the face. If I was, I wouldn't be here. If he punched me, I wouldn't be here. I was like, ah, fair point, you know.
Good point. Yeah. If you're, if your big lineman punches you in the face, probably. Yeah. So I think USC, I mean, it's just so tough to get a read on USC because a lot of times when we've thought they've been in turmoil in the past, they suddenly put it on for one game and just completely crush an opponent. And it's just, you know, you never really know. But I'm just concerned that Helton might be losing that team. I think that might be something that's happening. Just judging by a lot of the hubbub that's around, the movement from Brown to Darnold. I don't know that, like you said, I don't know if that has the support of the locker room and the way they've played. I mean, getting blown out by Bama and then playing a pretty not competitive second half against Stanford. It just doesn't smell of a team that's, you know, super committed to playing out the string for this guy. So give me Utah on the points. I'll take Utah 28, USC 20.
Okay. So we both are on Utah on that one. And, yeah, this is a must win game for USC. I don't think you can start off 1-3. And Clay Helton would be 1-5 since he was named the, permanent head coach. So there's already a lot of pressure now. So that could be if USC wins it, it's just because they know this is it. Like, you don't win this one, like, things are going to get ugly quick.
Yeah, for sure.
So do we want to, now, since we already talked about Stanford, do we want to go to Stanford's game or should we just keep going up the ladder?
I think we keep going up when we get to Stanford, when we get to UCLA.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're giving away the secrets. I don't know if they know that Stanford and UCLA are playing. okay. So number 10, we have
Oregon State Beavers.
Oregon State is ahead of USC in the Pac-12 rankings, making their slow climb up the power rankings. So last week, Oregon State did exactly what it needed to do against Idaho State. Looked like a Power 5 team going up against a cupcake. It was just very, very solid win. Was 23-0 at the half, 37-7 final. Just very, very solid. I don't think there was a line set on this game. If there was, they might not have covered. I don't know. But
yeah, there was no line, so we both got wins on this one, but you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, Oregon State didn't pass the ball particularly well, Darryl Garrettson, but they didn't really ask him to do a whole bunch. He was 15 to 30, but, running the ball, they just killed Idaho State on the ground. 41 carries for 246 yards and 3 touchdowns. Victor Bolden, the receiver, actually had 3 carries for 111 yards, so he was being used a lot in kind of tricky ways. So I think Oregon State did a lot of what I like to see when they go up against cupcakes. Instead of going super conservative and, you know, not trying to show their hand for future games, they worked on some stuff.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, going up against one of these cupcakes is a great opportunity to have live reps to work on your stuff, not just to, oh, we don't want to show anything, so we're going to pound the ball up the middle, you know, and, you know, take a lot of easy passes. But they actually worked on some stuff, some trickeration, which I like. So it was good to see. And they took care of business.
They, defense forced 5 turnovers in this one, Dave, leading to 24 points. I guess if one thing, you know, I don't think the offense was great in the red zone, that, you know, third down, they had a few issues. So I think there's certainly stuff you can work on. I mean, it's nice to, you know, to get a 20, you know, whatever, what was it, a 20 point win?
What 30
point. 30 point win, yeah. 37-7. Oh, yeah, 37-7.
Yeah.
And you work on some things.
7 equals 30.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at like 5 different lines here.
You're an engineer.
But there are still some improvements. So I think sometimes when you get a win like that, the coaches can go back and say, hey, we struggled in the red zone here, or why did we have problems on third down? So you feel good. You get the W. It's a convincing W, but there's still teachable moments as well. So I think, you know, it probably helped Gary Anderson going into this week, cause it's going to get a lot tougher. Same state, but a much different program going from Idaho State to Boise State.
Yeah, for sure. So this game is going to be at 12:30 p.m. on Fox Sports 1, Boise State going at Oregon State in Corvallis. Boise State, 13-point road favorite over the Beavers. And you completely understand that. Boise State's a very solid program. with a good defense, solid team across the board. I mean, it's a team that beat Washington State, which admittedly we have lower in the power rankings than Oregon State, but it's probably a slightly better team than Oregon State. Boise State beat them at home. You know, it's going to be interesting to see. I liked what I saw out of Oregon State against Minnesota in the opener, and I didn't see huge amounts that were wrong against Idaho State. I think I like Oregon State here, to cover the 13. I think they'll, I think it'll be something like Boise State 31, Oregon State 21, something like that. I think they'll hold down Oregon State's offense pretty well, but, I think it'll be a close enough game. I think Oregon State can get a rowdy home crowd and make this a closer game than it otherwise should be.
I think you're right. I mean, I think, you know, Washington State gave them a run, and that was, you know, on the blue turf. This will be in Corvallis. I mean, that's an advantage there. Give 13 points on the road. I mean, for a road team to overcome. I mean, I don't know, man. That's just a lot. All you got to do is turn one touchdown into a field goal at some point if you're the Oregon State defense. And I think you can take this one. That's just a lot of points for me. Yeah, I could see Boise State coming in and blowing them out, but Oregon State's playing better. They played well on the road. I think they're going to be happy to have a good opponent at home. They'll be excited for this. Angie, your boys up there. I'm going to take Oregon State plus the 13. They got to be able to cover that, Dave.
I think so. And I don't even know that they, you know, I'm not going to go ahead and predict an Oregon State win, but I wouldn't be like completely stunned if they won this one.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that they're clearly a more organized, cohesive team than they were last year. So I don't know. This will be a fun game to watch. I think everyone should tune into this one for at least a little bit of time.
Yeah, this is a math thing for me. 13 points, that's just a lot.
A lot of points.
Yeah. And like you said, Oregon State could win this one at home. So if you're going to get 13 points and you think you got a shot to win, let's take them. All right. Beavers, we'll see you. Hopefully you come through for us, because that's what matters, is if you guys cover the spread. We'll talk about one of those teams where I think we tweeted about that, Dave, later, but, number 9 in our power rankings, which, you know, for a 2-1 team, that seems a little low, but number 9 is
Arizona Wildcats.
The Wildcats righted the ship, last week against Hawaii, as we kind of expected they would. I don't think they ended up covering the 24,
no.
But they did beat Hawaii 47-28. It was 24, right?
It was 24 and a half, yeah.
So they didn't cover, which did either of us have them predicted as covering?
We both picked Hawaii.
Okay, cool. Good for us.
Yeah.
So Hawaii scored 14 points late to give us that win, which was nice of them.
Backdoor cover.
But Arizona, I mean, they looked okay in this one. They were, they scored 34 points in the first half. The offense looked probably better than it has this season. Ran the ball extremely well. Brandon Dawkins very much gives them a running element that they didn't have with the new Solomon, who's not a horrible runner, but he's not a true dual threat. Brandon Dawkins very clearly is. And also passed the ball efficiently. He was 16 of 21 for 235 yards, which sounds pretty ho-hum, but 11.2 yards per attempt is, you know, that's getting into elite territory, with one touchdown, but ran the ball 15 carries for 118 yards and 3 touchdowns. J.J. Taylor had 18 carries for 168 yards and a touchdown. All told, they had almost 350 yards rushing, which is very much what Rich Rod wants out of his running game every single game, but they did it in this one. And by and large, the defense played okay. It wasn't great. They allowed some stuff, especially on the ground, to Hawaii, but they played okay, and it wasn't until really late that Hawaii even made it, you know, a semi-respectable final score. Otherwise, it was pretty much all Arizona through three quarters.
The tailback position is a time, you know, it's a place where you can make an impact early on in your career. You know, sometimes you come in as a left tackle, like maybe you're not playing until a redshirt sophomore. But freshman J.J. Taylor, I mean, like you mentioned, he had a huge game in this one. And, you know, all the talk is about Nick Wilson and stuff, but being able to have a guy like that as a freshman come in and make the kind of plays he did, I think we'll see a lot of him throughout the Pac-12 season. So he was really impressive. You know, Dawkins, like you said, having the dual threat kind of thing. You know, we'll see kind of what happens at these positions later on, but they got some weapons there. Rich Rod has some weapons. There's some options. So, I think this offense will start clicking a little bit better. Maybe that, you know, some stuff to shore up on the defense, like you said, not wanting to give up 28 points to Hawaii, but, you know, I think this team was going to be able to score a lot of points. And they're that's the kind of, when they're doing that, that's when Arizona can make the run and try to win the Pac-12 South again. They got to be able to be dynamic and score points. And I think this is a team this year that can do that.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see this week because, Arizona, Anu Solomon's probably back to full health this week. You know, there's not a whole lot of solid information that comes out of Arizona because Rich Rod, is pretty much like Soviet Russia with the way he runs that program from a media coverage standpoint. But, you know, it sounds like Anu Solomon's probably back to full health, but with the way Dawkins played against Hawaii, and I don't think anybody was super enamored with Anu Solomon's play, not only this year, but last year either. I think it's going to be interesting to see whether they ride with Dawkins going forward, because again, he gives them that running ability that Solomon kind of doesn't. And Solomon's probably a better passer. You got to give him credit for that, but Dawkins, that dynamicism. Is that even a word? Dynamism?
I don't think so, but let's go with it. We're good.
Let's go with both of them. Not even just one. Let's go with both of them. His ability to do both, is very impressive. And if I had to guess, I would think Rich Rod would ride with Dawkins because he's never seemed particularly pleased with the new Solomon. And he was saying it was a quarterback competition in the offseason. So, I'm gonna say they go with Dawkins this week when they take on.
Oh, so we got to do the preview. See, man, you got to like let me know if you're setting.
No, I wanted to keep you on your toes.
All right, so Arizona, this is a big one. So we're like branching off to the next thing.
We're gonna talk Washington. Okay. We're gonna talk their previous game, and then we're gonna get into the matchup.
Okay. All right. So Arizona taking on
Washington Huskies.
All right. So obviously we're still ironing out the kinks, people. We used to do two of these a week. Now we're doing one. So it's just tricky. Okay. Washington, I mean, this bears virtually no mentioning, but Washington beat the pee out of Portland State, last week. They really are Portland State now, 41-3. this was a disgusting game, allowed virtually nothing defensively. And just crush them offensively. 6 yards a carry, 8.8 yards per pass attempt, and they allowed virtually nothing on the ground. This is what an elite team does to a bad opponent. And, you know, but it's also what a pretty good team does to a bad opponent. So we're going to see, which way Washington leans coming up pretty soon here. But I mean, do you have anything about this game you want to talk about? Because it just was this was a brutal beatdown.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of takeaways. Browning had 4 touchdowns. Washington allowed less than 1 yard per rush in this one, which is kind of crazy. 3 for 13 on third downs. They almost had 3 punts blocked, though. So maybe there's a teachable moment there. Like,
there we go. Yeah, there we go.
Hey, we got to fix something here. Like, can't get these punts blocked.
but otherwise, I mean, it was pretty much an all-purpose beatdown. Was not pretty, and Portland State scored 3 points in the third quarter. That was it. So anyway, the first real game for Washington is coming up this week, 7:30 p.m. on the Pac-12 Network. Number 9 Washington, 3-0, going up against number 9 in the Pac-12 power rankings, Arizona. Washington is our number 2 team.
Yes.
So this is going to be an interesting game. The line, I believe, they just recently set it. So let me pull this up. So Washington is favored by 9.5. It opened as a 10-point margin. I think they took a while to set it because they're still not sure of Solomon or Nick Wilson, what their status will be for this game for Arizona. Kind of an interesting line, though, because, you know, look at Boise State versus Oregon State. You know, Boise State, which I don't think is as good as Washington, they're favored by 13 over Oregon State, which is maybe a little bit worse than Arizona, but I would think this would be more like a 13 or 14 point line for Washington. It just doesn't feel right given, you know, I think Washington has clearly the best defense in the conference, and I don't think it's very close. And offensively, they've put some stuff together this season. Arizona, you know, I think Dawkins can maybe get some things going on the ground. But I'm not super confident in that offense, even with their kind of explosion against Hawaii. I think Washington will generally be able to shut them down. And while Arizona's defense, I think, looks okay and better than I was expecting in the post-Scooby Wright era, I'm not sure it's going to be able to completely hold down this Washington attack. So I think I like Washington by a couple of touchdowns. I think I like them to cover this 10 points, or it's 9.5.
I agree with you, Dave. I thought, like, if I was going to get, I try to guess the line and then whatever direction it's going. And I was thinking 12 or 13 points, kind of similar to what you said with, Boise State. The, you know, the scary thing is though that Arizona does look like they can put up points. Now it's not going to be, you know, this is going to be the best defense they faced. And you know, but usually you get a quarterback like that who's dynamic and can run the football. You're going to still score some, you know, so could they keep it close? But I think that the Washington offense has evolved enough and Jake Browning has just showed that there's so much stuff he can do. I don't know if the Arizona defense is going to have a lot of answers for him. So even if Arizona gets things rolling and they're running the football well and putting up some points that maybe you didn't expect them to do on this defense, I just think the Washington offense can completely outscore them. And, you know, 10, 12, 14 points is certainly, you know, at the minimum, I would think. So I'm going to take, Washington this one, laying the 9.5. I know they just look like so much of a better team right now. Chris Peterson's doing a great job. And I think Arizona's improved. And it's, you know, it's never easy to go on the road in the Pac-12 and open like that. But I just think Washington's going to handle it. If not on, you know, on one side of the ball, at least if the defense shuts them down or the offense, you know, scores a bunch of points or some combination of that, I just can't see it being closer than like 10.
Could this be a look ahead spot for Washington though? Because they've got Stanford, the following, I think Friday night. And that's, you know, maybe the biggest game in the Pac-12 season this year. I mean, I don't think Chris Peterson's teams have been prone to that sort of thing in the past, but, you know, that's something to keep in mind in this one.
That's true. But it's a home one. Like, if it was like a road trip to Stanford, maybe, but I think because it's the Pac-12 opener, it has its own unique set of circumstances. So, hey, this is the Pac-12 opener. They want to focus on that. And then it's like, all right, this is for the Pac-12 North Championship, basically, the next week. So I don't think there'll be as much of a look ahead, Dave, but, you know, it's college football. There's 19, 20-year-old kids. Who knows?
Yeah, for sure. All right, moving on.
Okay, so now we're going to go up to we'll go back up the list, right?
Up the list. Back up the list.
Man, this is very complex. It's just
like this is convoluted. We've got to figure out a new system.
Yeah. I mean, this probably works, but it's just, you know, you're kind of all over the place. All right. So our number 8 team is
Colorado Buffaloes.
Oh, Colorado. They almost did this. You know, you're not going to notice it from the final score. Michigan number 4 beat Colorado 45-28 in Michigan. But this was all Colorado in the first half, or at least the first quarter. Buffs looked like they were just so ready for this one. Sefa Lufau was playing really, really well. They did so much good on the ground, through the air, that it looked like Colorado had a real chance, even into the third quarter. It was 28-24, after Sefa Lufau, Gimpy, with his ankle just gotten crushed, through a huge touchdown pass to put him ahead 28-24. But from then on, Lufau got kicked out of the game. Oh, not kicked out of the game. Lufau left the game with an injury, and Michigan poured on 21 unanswered. But it was a really, really competitive game through the first half and into the third quarter. Big issues for Colorado. Anytime they tried to punt the ball, literally anytime they tried to punt the ball, it was a bad thing. They had two punts blocked. And then another one returned for a touchdown. They just didn't look quite right in special teams. But if you take out all the punting, I mean, this was a Colorado win or a very competitive game. So a lot to build on for Colorado, but they have to hope that Sefa Lufau is healthy going forward because, the backup quarterback situation looks like a grim, grim disaster.
Yeah, the special team, you can't go on the road against a good team like that. You have to play even on special teams at the minimum. If you can beat them a little bit on special teams, that's fine. You can't have a disastrous special teams performance, and that's exactly what Colorado did. But, you know, the Sefa Lufau injury just really hurt them so badly, and it was, you know, 21-7. You're on the, you know, in the big house beating Michigan, and it would almost take a utter collapse to have it switch the way it did. And that's really what happened. I mean, it was, you know, that TD pass they had to start the game. They go up 7-0. You get all this momentum. like I said, 21-7. They actually had a fumble recovery for a touchdown to put them up by two touchdowns. It was Bill McCartney's grandson, Derek McCartney, who ended up returning the fumble for a touchdown. Then he ends up getting out. I think he was injured.
He's out for the year, I think, now.
Yeah, he's out for the year now. It's just so many bad things kind of happened after so many good things happened in this game. But, you know, I thought they fought hard, Dave. It wasn't enough. You would like to see the effort they put in. It should have been a closer game. But they still covered, which we were.
That was the most important thing for us here at the podcast champions.
They covered the spread. We both picked, Colorado in this one. We thought they were, you know, keep it within 19 and a half. We got a little testy there at the end, but cover city. So we're happy about that.
Yeah. I was pretty happy that they, held on to cover. You know, and there was a lot to build on. I think if Lufau, even if, you know, maybe he's a little gimpy this week and doesn't play against Oregon, if he comes back for the meat of the conference schedule, I think this is a bowl team this year. I think that he looks good enough. Their defense looks good enough. Their general offensive, you know, prowess looks good enough that I think they'll be able to generate some real wins. You know, I would have, if Lufau had stayed healthy for this entire game, I would have loved to have seen the outcome because they played this team even aside from punting. And if you have Lufau for that second half, they might have won this game despite their awful punting. So there was a lot to like about Colorado. I think Mike McIntyre clearly has that program going in the right direction now, where it was not obvious the previous 3 years, that was the case, but he clearly does now. And they need to get their quarterback situation righted. And, you know, I think if you're, you know, obviously Davis Webb had a nice game for Cal and they beat Texas, which we'll get to in a little bit, but, you know, it would have been interesting to see a guy like Davis Webb on this team. Because if they had him and Lufau could have redshirted this year and then played next year, I think that would have been a pretty interesting 2 years for Colorado. And now we'll just have to see what happens next year when Lufau's gone.
Yeah. And then, you know, just so when you look at the score, just realize it was closer than that, that this was a Colorado team that's better, that gave Michigan a run. And like Dave said, could have won this one. So, result wasn't, you know, what Mike McIntyre wanted, but I think there's some positive you can take out of the game. And if Lufau's healthy, like you said, I think they can make a run at a bowl like we thought they had a chance to do last year. But this week, they got to go on the road. It's not going to get any easier. They got to take on
Oregon Ducks.
All right. So the Ducks had a really tough game against Nebraska, ended up losing by 3, which was the exact margin predicted by Vegas. So those guys know what they're doing sometimes. Nebraska won 35-32, over Oregon. This was a really, really strange game because if, Mark Helfrich had done, probably 95% of coaches do, this would have been a tie game at the end because he kept going for two when extra points were there to be had.
But and Dave, if you go for two, you get two, it's double. Like, isn't that better?
I think that's better if you get them, but I think the percentage likelihood of converting a 2-point conversion is, I think they did the math on this. I think it's under 50% because the goal line is the hardest place to convert, on one down. So if you've got a fourth down at the goal line, that's actually the hardest place to convert. If you have more field to work with, you've got a few more variations, but within 2 yards of the goal line, it's actually a very, very hard place to convert. So generally speaking, you only want to do 2-point conversions when you need to, when you absolutely need to. So
getting like 20% of them isn't good.
20% of 5 2-point conversions is worse than 100% of point afters.
I got to run the math in my head here, but now that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was literally the game. I mean, they lost by 3, and so they converted one of their 2-point conversions.
The first one. They were 8-0. Yeah,
they missed on the other 4, and that was the game. They didn't do well. Oregon lost. You know, it wasn't just that. I thought Dakota Prukop had his first kind of maybe this is an FCS quarterback playing at a level a little bit higher than he should be playing. Type of game. He didn't look great, missed some obvious throws. He missed some of their very speedy receivers deep in this one, which is kind of hard to do. Darren Carrington missed him a couple of times deep for touchdowns. They ran the ball well because it's Oregon. They run the ball well, even with Royce Freeman going down. But there were some very bad notes for this one. Devon Allen is out for the year. Tyler Crosby, their starting left tackle, is out for the year now. So some bad news. And Royce Freeman, he got hurt. It doesn't seem like it's going to be an out for the year type thing, but, pretty much a disaster game because they lost a game first. So that kind of diminishes their hopes of, you know, really getting back into the playoff conversation this year. And then they also lost some really key players. So not a great game for the Ducks.
Yeah. And we dropped them down to number six. That's probably the most devastating news of all. Obviously.
Yeah. I think that's the most critical piece.
Yeah. But it, you know, it started off very Oregon-like. And I think I tweeted something like, how many times has Mike Riley been down to Oregon 8-0? Like they just do that all the time, you know?
Yeah.
But it just didn't get much better after that. The end of the game, I think it was like a minute left or something, or a little more than that. Prekop had, I forget who it was, but wide open behind the defense and just underthrew him. And you're just like, oh man, like that was a game. They could have won the game right there. And like you said, maybe that was looking more like an FCS quarterback. That's a throw you got to make. You got to hit your dude in stride. He gets behind the defense. You can win the game if you just make that throw and you got to do it. And then they had like, you know, it was 4th and 18, and I don't know what kind of play they ran. It looked terrible. I don't know. You remember seeing that one at the very end of the game? It didn't look like the Oregon we knew when their backs were against the wall and you need points it just looked like that's when they could turn it on before. They certainly didn't turn it on at the end of this game and they ended up losing.
Yeah. And the defense once again didn't look good. You know, at the beginning of the game, they looked okay. But then Nebraska ran so well. Tommy Armstrong had 95 yards. Divine Ozigbo had 95 yards. Terrell Newby had 42. Averaged almost 5 yards a carry on 47 carries. So Nebraska was getting what it wanted on the ground. I don't know where the Ducks go from here. It's going to be very, very interesting because I don't think Dakota Prukop is anywhere close to what Vernon Adams was last year. And Vernon Adams was already a step down from Marcus Mariota. So, quarterback recruiting, I think, is still the thing that's really killing Oregon. It's slowly eating away at obviously a prestige program in the Pac-12, but, I think with the quarterback recruiting situation, the way it is with them, they're scuffling a little bit, and it's going to be interesting to see what they do next year because it doesn't sound like there's much within the program that they're super excited about, from a quarterback perspective. So are they going to go FCS again? Are they going to hope that one of these guys develops? It's going to be very, very interesting to see.
Hey, Max Brown, maybe he can go up there.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, he seems like a great fit for the Oregon offense. Got you. All right, so Oregon taking on Colorado this week, and this is a really interesting game because both teams are hit by injuries now. This will be 2:30 p.m. on the Pac-12 Network. Colorado going at Oregon. In Eugene, there wasn't a line set on this recently, but it has since gone up, and it opened at 7.5. It has moved to 10.5, favoring Oregon. So I think they're probably counting on Sefa Lufau being out maybe for this one. No word on Royce Freeman, but, Lufau, it sounds like he's still a game time decision. Reading reports, it sounds like he practiced a little this week, but it's uncertain whether he's going to be ready to go. If I had to go with my gut, I would think that Lufau will be ready to go because he is, without a doubt, the toughest quarterback in the Pac-12. He wanted to go back in with his ankle pretty much wrecked on Saturday, so I think he'll be ready for this one. Oregon favored by 10.5. I think that's got to be based on the running game. You know, Michigan was able to get some stuff on the ground against Colorado, and Oregon obviously is an elite running team. I think I like Oregon here just because I think their running game could take advantage of Colorado. And I think Colorado might have a little bit of a letdown after last week when they were so close and then just got away from them the second half. And I don't know how healthy Lufau is going to be. So I think I like Oregon by a couple of touchdowns. I think I'd probably take them something like 38-24, something like that.
I'm with you on that, Dave. If you're going to go on the road at the big house and be, what was it? Almost a 20-point underdog and, you know, 10.5, and it's going in that direction. When it moves by a whole field goal in that direction, usually the sharps kind of know something's going on there. So I'll take, Oregon and lay the points. Colorado could certainly be in this one though. And I could see them if Lufau plays and they shore up some of the deficiencies they had against Michigan. and able to play, they were, you know, the whole game, the way they played in the first half in the Big House, then they could not only just keep it close, they can win this one. But I just kind of think going on the road, you know, to Michigan and then to Oregon, where it's going to be really loud and really tough. I just think that's a lot to ask of a team that is better. I like what they're doing, but I think it's just a lot to ask of them. So I'll take Oregon and lay the points too.
All right.
All right. So next team up, we have at the number 7 spot,
UCLA Bruins.
All right. So UCLA last week, won a barn burner on the road in Provo, 17-14 over BYU. This was a interesting game because it kind of turned a lot of what we thought about UCLA on its head. The Bruins defensively were very, very good in this one. Shut down BYU's running game to a large extent. And then BYU only rushed like I think Washington, they allowed just, under, 1 yard of carry from BYU, and BYU's running game had actually been pretty good coming into this one. Taysom Hill was basically a non-factor at quarterback. He had 10 carries for negative 7 yards, and also threw the ball pretty much poorly the entire game. So defensively, UCLA was great, but then offensively, didn't run the ball well. 34 carries for 50 yards, so 1.5 yards per carry. And then Josh Rosen, once again, was just kind of off. So that's now 3 games where he's not been, I think, anything close to what people expected heading into this year. He had an okay game against UNLV, but hasn't really performed up to, I think, a lot of outside expectations and probably his own internal expectations. He's talked about being disappointed with his performance in each of the first 3 games. But defensively, UCLA has to like what it saw. Eddie Vanderdoes came back after getting hurt at the beginning of the UNLV game, and he shut down the run pretty much on his own for the first quarter. Takaris McKinley, who went down at the beginning of the Texas A&M game, came back for this one. And was a terror off the edge. The only issue for him is he once again looked like he was having some issues with his groin, and then also looked like he might have had some kind of head thing at the end, might not have, but he got pulled from the game there at the end. So he's questionable for this week. Vanderdoes, though, is back, and it's the defense looks like it's getting a little bit healthier, which is going to help. It just seems like it's whack-a-mole with UCLA every week. You know, one issue looks like it gets corrected and then another issue pops up. Beating BYU 17-14 on the road, this was a fine result, and it was really a 17-7 game, but then BYU scored a late touchdown when UCLA went prevent with 2 minutes to go just to kind of grind the clock out. But it was a nice win for UCLA. Anytime you can win on the road in a tough environment like Provo, it's great, but, still some issues left to correct.
Yeah, I think, and you can win games in this league if you're going to give up, you know, only 23 rushing yards. You know, if you're able to shut down an opponent's run game, and, there's a lot of teams that like to run the football in the Pac-12, even though you think about, you know, throwing it all over the place. I think you can do a lot with that. And I think that was a great, you know, to do that on the road, in a tough place. I think, you know, Eddie Vanderdoes, the whole crew, did a great job there. I did expect to see a little bit more, firepower, offensively. And what was the deal with, there's something with Soso Jumbo going on? Cause I thought, I mean, he looks like he can be an absolute stud.
So through 3 games, UCLA has had a few guys unavailable every single game. I'm not going to get into the specifics of each guy, but if we're reading between the lines on all these, and Jim Mora keeps saying, well, I just didn't play them, or they weren't available for this game, these were most likely suspensions. So off-season stuff, you know, some of these guys just, so Nate Starks was unavailable for the first 2 games. Soso Jumbo was unavailable for this game. Ainu Taua was unavailable for this game. Randall Goforth was unavailable for this game. Jaleel Wadud was unavailable for the 2nd game. So there were just some guys who were unavailable for games. And I don't think they were hurt.
Interesting. So. Yeah, but I mean, I love the way he was running the ball.
Yeah.
Through the first 2 games. But you expect him back?
Yeah, I would think he would be back this game. But, you know, there hasn't been much information about the length of time that any of these guys will be out. Or that Jim Mora will choose not to play them. It honestly seems very weird that there wouldn't be a little bit more just, oh yeah, we're holding these guys out for these games because of reasons. So, but not much information. Jim Mora is leaning much more towards Rich Rod's Soviet Russia style of coverage of the team, but it's okay.
Right. How was the run game without him in there?
It was bad, but I don't know that it was necessarily a product of the running back. I think BYU, I think they either had a pretty good idea of UCLA's running signals. Like they might have had a read on what UCLA was trying to do because they were guessing run blitz a lot. So I think they just probably had a read on UCLA's offense, maybe some tendencies that UCLA needs to correct. Because they were just choosing right a lot and they had the box stacked a lot when UCLA was going to run the ball. And maybe that's a case where UCLA needs to check out of that play, whatever it ends up being. But it just generally worked out that UCLA was running into more guys than it could block. So it was an offensive line issue, but I think it was more from an offensive schematic point standpoint where they just weren't some kind of tendency or some kind of tip off to BYU. But it didn't look like the running backs were the problem. Nate Starks actually ran pretty well. He generated some tough yards and he's a big physical runner. But there just wasn't much to be had in the running game.
Well, big game this weekend in the Rose Bowl, taking on, we already played their music, but I'll play it again, the number one team in the Podcast of Champions Power Rankings.
Stanford Cardinal.
And we've already talked about Stanford's previous game, but this one is interesting because Vegas opened this game as UCLA favored by one, which is so crazy to me. Stanford is now favored by three. It moved very, very quickly to favored by three. And actually, some books have it as -3.5 for Stanford, which is a big half point, as we all know in the college football world. So Stanford, number 17 in the country, UCLA. You know, I actually kind of understand why they have the line set the way it is. If you watch Stanford, if you watch them against USC, it ended up being a 17-point win for Stanford, but there were some vulnerabilities. Their defensive line, I liked them in the first game, but they weren't firing off the ball too well against USC, and the USC interior offensive line was able to get some push against them, especially through the first half. And offensively, they're not particularly close to how efficient and great they were last year. They're going to get there. I think they'll be much better at the end of the year than they are right now, but Ryan Burns, I think they're still kind of learning to have trust in him. So I kind of get it. I just don't think UCLA is built to take advantage of what Stanford is necessarily weak at. I think UCLA, their interior offensive line is maybe the biggest weak spot on the entire team. And so I don't know that they're built to take advantage of a Stanford defensive line that maybe looks a little bit, a cut maybe a little bit below what it was 2 years ago. Harrison Phillips for Stanford should be back for this one, their nose tackle, which I think it'll be another boost for that Stanford defensive line. You know, I think this is going to take a big game from Josh Rosen. I think he'll need to be what everyone was expecting him to be going into this season for UCLA to win this one. And I'm just not confident that's going to happen. I think he's still ironing out the kinks in this new offense, and I don't know that he's necessarily ready to put up a stellar performance against a team as good as Stanford. I think he might still be, you know, I think he'll make improvements. I think he'll be a little bit better in this one, but I think he would need to be leaps and bounds better for that offense to generate enough against a good Stanford team. And then defensively, if McKinley's not ready to go, and I think he's the big critical piece here, if he's not ready to go, Christian McCaffrey might have, he'll have 200 yards on the ground and 150 off tackle. Because nobody on this UCLA team is really good at containment aside from McKinley. So I think I like Stanford here, something like 28-24.
I'm going to agree with you on that one. I couldn't believe that UCLA started off as the favorite in this one. I think if UCLA were scoring more points against BYU, I'd give them a chance here. I know that was on the road, but I think Stanford just is so fundamentally sound. They're going to, like we said, beat you with a million paper cuts, but then, you know, hit something big with Christian McCaffrey. I kind of see it as a, you know, 5-6, 7-point game, something like that, more than a field goal, but probably close. But it's like a game that Stanford probably controls. UCLA has some chances to get in it, but they have to make some big offensive plays. They're not able to do it, and Stanford kind of holds on and wins by a touchdown or something like that. So I'll take Stanford, given the points as well.
Yeah, and it'll be a fun game. I think it'll be a close one. I think it'll be closer than UCLA's bad losses to Stanford over the last few years. But I think it'll be another Stanford win. They're ninth straight over UCLA.
All right. I think we have two teams left to talk about, but our number five team is
California Golden Bears.
All right. So Cal, we left them for dead and then they rose from the dead. Cal beat Texas, and this was a wild, fun game. This one was 35-33 at the half, ended up 50-43, just back and forth. Crazy, crazy fun. I really enjoyed watching this one because I was, you know, writing all my UCLA stuff after the game, and this game was still going because it was so high scoring. And it was just, it was a lot of fun, you know, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So weird though that there were no points scored in the third quarter by either team. But it was a lot of fun. Cal's offense looks like it has not missed a beat in the post Jared Goff era. And I think, you know, given how Goff has looked for the Rams in terms of, his preseason performance, maybe we're going to be talking about system quarterbacks coming out of Cal, because maybe Goff wasn't as good as we all thought. And maybe it's just a matter of the system, because Davis Webb went 27 of 40 for nearly 400 yards, 10 yards per attempt, and 4 touchdowns. That's pretty good. And on Texas's side, you know, I thought Shane Bichelle had a bit of a true freshman game, but he was still able to do some things. They ran the ball really well in Cal. I don't think Cal has a defense, but it doesn't matter. They really, really poured it on offensively. And this was a wild thing because Cal, you know, they almost gave it up late because I think it was Vic and Wary, dropped a, well, he did the thing that seems to be the most popular thing in college football, where he's almost into the end zone and he drops the ball before the end zone. And Texas looked like it recovered, but there was some weird semantic thing that it wasn't an immediate recovery. And so then Cal got the ball back at the 2 yard line or whatever it was. But that could have been very, very bad. Texas could have gotten the ball back and then could have been a Texas win, there at the end. But this was a lot of fun. And I think Cal, clearly a dangerous team. They've got an offense, don't have a defense, but if you've got an offense like that, you can surprise some teams.
It was baffling that these teams did not score in the third quarter. Like, how did they, you know, they're just scored all over the place. But for Cal to do that, you know, losing Jared Goff, losing, I think, their top 6 receivers from last year, you're taking on, you know, Texas, who's an improved team. They, you know, they beat Notre Dame and Deshaun Kizer, and just have, you know, Davis Webb looked better than Kizer did in the game, you know, against Texas, and threw the ball over the field. I just really like the way they got this going. Maybe it is a system quarterback kind of thing, but they should put up points. It should be fun to watch. If you like offense, you should probably watch a lot of the Cal games. They're going to probably give up a lot of points and score a lot of points. Texas had a curious decision, Dave, late in the game. I think it was about 2 minutes left, down 7, and they end up punting.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know if that's the right call there. Now, they, like you said, they could have got the ball back with that crazy play where you're dropping, you know, dropping the 1 yard line. It looked like an immediate recovery to me. It was a, within 3 seconds, a Texas player clearly picked up the ball. I don't think a whistle had blown at that point. If a whistle blew, I could understand it. But it's one of those situations where you shouldn't have been in that position in the first place. Sure. But yeah, that was just added. It was just a cherry on top of an amazing 5-scoop sundae with whipped cream and butterscotch sauce and hot fudge and all that. I mean, it was an amazing one.
Yeah, that was tons of fun. And then they're taking on.
Oh, I'm sorry. So
give it to me. Give it to me.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
All right. So Arizona State on Friday night of last week, I predicted them to cover in this one. I don't know if you did. Did you?
Yeah, we both picked ASU in this one.
They won by 4, and it took a 17-point fourth quarter comeback to win this game. Manny Wilkins kind of came back to earth a little bit, didn't throw the ball particularly well in this one. Arizona State also didn't run the ball super efficiently in this one. They averaged 4.3 yards a carry, but it wasn't kind of the dominant ground performance I was expecting. Just kind of a weird, strange game. And it looked like they were a little bit lethargic in this one. Only won by 4 over a Texas San Antonio team that isn't particularly good. Allowed a lot of stuff through the air. They shut them down pretty much on the ground, which was good to see, but allowed some stuff through the air. I don't know what to make of ASU after this one, because I was expecting them to be kind of like Cal, all offense, no defense, and it'll be a lot of fun to watch. And I still think they probably are that team, but This was kind of disconcerting after they put together a couple of nice performances in the first two games.
Yeah, it's weird that we have them number 4. And just for the last game too, we both had, Cal, plus seven. So we both won the last one, but we both got this one wrong because we had ASU minus 20 and, you know, UTSA won the turnover battle, 3-0. There was, you know, a couple of punt returns that were big. I mean, this is a team that lost to Colorado State, who Colorado absolutely destroyed.
Yeah.
And they really should have won this game. I mean, Arizona State was kicking field goals instead of touchdowns. But, you know, late in the game, I think the Arizona State defense played better. They're not blitzing as much as they were before. Maybe, I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but, I think they had like four straight 3-and-outs in the second half. So I think the Arizona State defense stepped up a little bit. They tried to come back. They threw a pick late that, looked like it could have been a touchdown, but it was underthrown. But they, you know, their quarterback was running around all over the place. And I just think they just, I don't know. I think the UTSA kind of ran out of gas in this one, but it shouldn't have been this close. It just looked like Arizona State just was not, they weren't in it for a while. And I don't know. Sometimes you play a team and they're just on fire. And I don't know if that's exactly the case, but it just seemed like UTSA had a bunch of confidence and, you know, Arizona State did not. They got a couple of late sacks. I thought they were good. They had a lot of tackles for loss, which is, you know, we've seen Todd Graham defenses do that, but. You know, winning by four against the UTSA team. You know, something's not right there.
Yeah, for sure. So I just realized we didn't say the game time for Stanford UCLA. That's 5 p.m. on ABC, just so okay. You know. And then, so this one is Cal versus ASU at 7 p.m. on ESPN2 on Saturday. So here's the funky part. We would have said Cal looked better than ASU probably last week, right?
Yeah.
ASU is favored by four. At home against the Golden Bears. And the most important number is the over-under, which is 82.5. So no one is expecting either of these teams to play defense. You know, I think it's actually a pretty good matchup for ASU. I understand the line a little bit. Cal's run defense is non-existent, and ASU's run game is very, very good in theory. UTSA did a nice job of limiting it. But Kalen Ballage, DeMario Richard, and Manny Wilkins combined to give them a really good run look, and I don't think Cal is equipped to stop any of those guys. Cal, though, should be able to take advantage of things in the air. This is going to be a true shootout. Tons and tons of fun, tons of points. I think it's gonna go similarly to the last one. I think it'll be back and forth between Cal and Texas, because I think ASU might be a somewhat similar team to Texas, in terms of their ground game. I honestly have no idea who I'm picking here. I think I'll take Cal. I might take Cal outright.
Nice.
Yeah, I might take Cal outright. I think they'll take them like, 48-44. How about that?
I like it. I would have put this as a pick'em. So the fact that Cal's getting 4 points more than a field goal, I'll definitely take. If I'm getting Cal and some points, just like last week with Texas, 7 points, I'm going to take them at this point. Yeah, I could see it. I mean, I could see this going a whole bunch of different ways. Does Arizona State get back to what they were doing well and running the ball and, you know, just, they could just pound Cal that way. But Cal, I mean, Arizona State's going to force some negative plays, but Cal just seems to have the ability to pick up a, second 15, they pick up 9 and then pick up the first down and keep moving, where a lot of offenses can't do that. So I think, you know, even if you force them into a negative play, they're still able to move the chains on you sometimes more than other teams too. So I think Cal's going to score a bunch of points. I don't have a lot of faith in the defense being able to shut down Arizona State's run game. And they want to try to get back to the ways that they, you know, the way it was before. But I think Cal goes in the desert. Maybe doesn't win, but be close enough that field goal game either way. So I'm getting 4 points. I'll take Cal and the points.
All right. Well, that'll be, I think that'll be the fun kind of, you know, Pac-12 after darky type game on Saturday night. I'm going to enjoy watching that one.
After darky. I like it.
Darky.
So that's it. So that's our power rankings. We got them all in there and, predicted all the games. We're doing well so far in our picks. Hopefully we keep them going this week and, should shorten the shows a little bit now that we'll have Pac-12 teams playing each other. Instead of talking about 10 different games or 11 different games, we'll just talk about 6.
It'll be 5 or 6 every week.
Cool. All right. Well, that's David Woods. I'm Ryan Abraham. This is the Podcast of Champions. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Enjoy all of the big weekend of Pac-12 football games, and we will talk to you next time.